I decided to record a video in my kitchen at 9 p.m., basically stating that this was day one of my journey to sell my house without a real estate agent. And it was sort of crazy to me that in this AI era, there wasn't a single centralized platform to help consumers navigate this process. I think the industry has done a phenomenal job in, and I'm going to use this word very intentionally, gaslighting us. I mean, we're in competition with agents as agents are in competition with one another.
Okay.
But we're against this system. It's funny because we have a whole series we're going to put out on how to tell your, how
no,
to tell
really?
Your real estate
is
agent.
It going
like
to be
how
funny?
To break up with your real estate agent.
This is the ProCo 360 podcast for people who love Colorado and love hearing from Colorado's most inventive and successful entrepreneurs. Today's guest is Mike Chambers, founder and CEO of Ridley. Ridley's a technology platform that allows homeowners to sell their homes without the typical commissions paid to real estate agents. The platform leverages technology and other efficiencies to get that done. Mike is super passionate about Ridley, and so are investors who recently poured in over $6 million of funding to propel Ridley's growth. Right now, there's over $1.5 billion in property value being powered by Ridley, and I have so many questions, particularly how Ridley plans to change selling norms that are so well entrenched. So, Mike, welcome to ProCo 360.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Glad you are. And by the way, I also have a special guest in the studio. Peter Simonson's a Colorado real estate agent who actually made me aware of Ridley. He's my neighbor. We're talking over the fence. He goes, "You know these guys?" I'm like, "No." So I thought it'd be fun to have Peter in the booth with us in case he's got comments, questions from an agent's perspective, right? So, hi,
yeah.
Peter.
Hey. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Peter, I got to ask, did you find out about Ridley from the Instagram account?
Yes.
You did. Okay, yep. So are you a day one follower?
Yeah, I've been following you for, Jesus, it's been a while now.
Nice.
Yeah.
Awesome, man.
So I've seen the full journey of everything.
Well, it's good to meet you.
Yeah, good to meet you too.
Cool. All right, let's dig in. First, I always like to start with like the problem that you're solving.
Yeah. So we are trying to help help consumers save billions of dollars in unnecessary real estate commissions. So, you know, this process of buying and selling a home has become increasingly expensive over the years as home prices have risen. Commissions are a fixed percentage to home prices. And I'd argue that, you know, technology has really enabled consumers to navigate much of this process on their own, but they haven't really seen any benefit in terms of the savings. So with Ridley, we're trying to use AI to empower consumers to navigate the transaction on both the buy side and the sell side, while giving them the ability to call on agents for aspects of the transaction that they might want additional help with.
Yeah, I want to talk about all that. We're going to break that down. But first, like I was intrigued by a quote or something from a LinkedIn post that you had. It said, it begins with, contrary to the headlines.
Yeah.
And then it says, our goal with Ridley has never been to replace real estate agents. Our goal is to eliminate the inefficiencies in the process by putting consumers in control with software and letting them choose when, if, and how they want support from an agent. In this model, consumers pay for the value they receive, which is what you were just saying, not an arbitrary commission tied to the price of their home. So, contrary to the headlines, it sounds like you've gotten maybe some scare tactic head. Like, what are you seeing?
Well, I know. I mean, I think to have the full context here. So, you know, this journey started out of a personal experience. I had zero intention of starting a software company in real estate. I have no background in real estate. I have background in technology and nonprofit, actually. And it started when I was looking to sell my house in Colorado, in Boulder. I've got a home in North Boulder, on a street where typically all you need to do is put a yard sign out and you'll have an offer by 5 p.m. And I started interviewing agents in town, couldn't find an agent who was willing to list my house for less than what would equate to over $100,000 in commissions, close to $150,000 in commissions. I thought that was kind of crazy. It wasn't that I was unwilling to pay for a service. It was that I didn't feel the value that I was going to receive was reflected in the price that I was being asked to pay. And so I decided that I was going to sell it myself, and I've got a background in viral marketing. I thought that this would be an interesting journey to take the internet along with, and much to my wife's dismay, decided to record a video in my kitchen at 9 p.m., basically stating that this was day one of my journey to sell my house without a real estate agent. And the intention was to just basically share my experience, help people understand what's actually involved in the process, and also call out the ways that I would argue this industry is failing consumers. Woke up the next day and the account had gone viral. And a lot of stuff happened throughout my own transaction. We had agents who were steering clients away from my house. It was documented in the New York Times story. I ran into issues with Zillow, where Zillow was abiding by a policy that was set forth by the National Association of Realtors called the no commingling rule, whereby they would suppress listings that were for sale by owner behind a filter in the UI that no one knew existed.
Wow.
So all of these things were sort of coming out, and it was an emotional process. Like, I was fired up. I was, you know, the ire.
Did
of
you
the
feel
entire
like
industry.
Don Quixote, like, you know, charging?
Well, it sort of became that way. Like, I leaned into it as a joke, right? Yeah. And it was just like this for sale by owner against the whole, and it was sort of a very much so a marketing thing. But really, when I started thinking about whether or not I wanted to start a company here, I mean, the reason I was selling my house is we had just recently bought land down in Nosara, Costa Rica. We were considering moving down there for a few years with our kids while they're still young. And that was very much the plan. Hmm. But as I was going through the process, I was using all of these different platforms. I was on Zillow. I was on using ChatGPT. I was on the government websites to access forms. And it was sort of crazy to me that in this AI era, there wasn't a single centralized platform to help consumers navigate this process, while allowing them to also potentially call on an expert in the form of an agent or an attorney or something for the aspects of the process that they might want additional help with.
Well, you say that agents will benefit too, that they'll no longer pay high lead fees or ridiculous brokerage splits. Peter, you're nodding. Like, why?
Well, I know exactly what you're talking about with like high lead fees, because I'm a Zillow agent. So any people that I meet at the doorstep, I have to get, and I convert them, I have to give Zillow 40% of
crazy.
My commission.
Yeah.
And then whatever my brokerage takes, I split that 50-50.
Wow.
So I'm getting
so good. High fees may, but you
so
know,
the agent is the face of the issue,
yeah.
But they don't, the consumer does not see the downstream inefficiencies in the process that are driving up costs. So agents oftentimes are getting, you know, they're bearing the brunt of the hatred, when in reality, there's a lot of other aspects that are.
Oh, okay. I got to push back on that, because I've never really seen I got to tell you, I've had some resentment about the way this works, and I've actually worked around it a couple of times. We can talk about that in a bit, but I've never really sensed realistic hatred towards agents, because everybody just seemed to accept that it 6%, you lay it out, and that's it. Like, it's just an accepted thing.
It has been historically an accepted thing. I think there have just really not been alternatives that folks have thought as viable. The industry has done a really good job in labeling anything that's sort of outside of the normal 6% commission as sort of discount or lower service.
Yeah.
You're not going to get the same experience. They've also done a phenomenal job of manipulating data to help consumers believe that they are potentially more at risk by not using a real estate agent, when in reality, there's no data that supports that assertion. So there's a lot of factors that have contributed to that.
But, you know, I'm going off script here a little bit, because I found a condo I wanted to buy as an investment, and I'd already found it. I actually was fishing with this guy, and he said, I'm trying to sell this condo. I'm like, well, I'd like to buy it. And that's what happened. And then this agent I called, who was a friend of mine, said, well, you know, I charge 3% to represent you. I'm like, no.
I
like,
have a house.
I already have it. Like, I'll pay you X,
yeah.
Which was about a third of that. And I want you to shepherd the process. He goes, well, I don't work that way. I'm like, well, then we're not going to work together.
Yeah.
And he did. He did it. And it worked out fine. Because I didn't want to pay it. But secondly, I didn't trust myself to know how. You're saying that systems exist today so that I don't even need someone like that if I don't want them.
Well, I mean,
them.
You think about the buy side of the equation, you could argue that agents are even less essential to the process. Maybe not for first-time home buyers or for folks who are buying out of state. Like, there's definitely exceptions to it. But over 90% of homes are now found on home buying sites like Zillow. And historically, it was only agents and realtors had access to this data via the MLSs. And the problem, and I don't think a lot of consumers realize this, is when you go on a website like Zillow and you indicate interest in a home, it's being sold to a Zillow agent, a Zillow Flex agent. Zillow's taking either 40% of that, or they're selling it in their Premier program, however it's structured. So you're sort of almost guaranteeing that you're going to pay a commission on the buy side. And the ability to contact a seller directly has been intentionally, you know, obscured by these platforms, by NAR, by the industry, because they want to force people into the system that's benefiting them.
So that's, you advocate that should still be there, but it should be optional. It should be as somebody wants it, not a required format.
I think that folks should be able to call on experts. They shouldn't be forced into paying an arbitrary commission. They should be paying for the value that they are receiving.
All right.
And in some cases that is, you know, they need an agent for the entire process and they need their handheld and they should be paying a meaningful commission to you know, compensate the agent for the time and energy and expertise that they added. But in other cases, someone might just want a contract review.
Yeah.
And why should they be forced to pay 3 or 6% for that?
Agreed.
Right.
And I've lived that and yeah, I agree. So I want to back up and we'll probably come back into this a little bit because I've got some other things I want to explore, but I want to back up and talk about forming this business because it sounded like a passion project at first, almost like, you know, you just got excited to fight back on behalf of yourself, right? That's what it feels like.
It sort of was, yeah.
And so you did it without any help, but then you wanted to build a business around it, right? So what
happened? So this is what happened. So we ended up going under contract. We had some out-of-state buyers and it was in the sort of, there was an extended period for the inspection. So it was delayed. It was timed for them to come out during their school holiday, whatever. But in that time period, I had started talking to some investors about this idea. And we were able to do a partnership with a Colorado-based venture fund called Moxie Ventures. They're split between Colorado and San Francisco. And so we raised a small amount of seed funding or pre-seed funding. And I was committed to sort of going all in. At this point, we had a very large community on social media. We had a lot of earned media. It was clear that we had sort of tapped into this underlying frustration amongst the consumer base.
Who's we?
I guess me. it was me. Yeah. It's funny. Yeah, at that time it was me. And you know, this problem seemed like the sort of perfect confluence of the many things that I've done throughout the course of my career and what's important to me in terms of what I'm looking for in a project these days. You know, there's a clear mission behind this. There's, you know, something to wake up for every single day. And I think it's a very important problem to solve, you know.
That you must have modeled out some sort of fantasy spreadsheet. So you got seed capital, so you must have modeled out this pie in the sky hockey stick thing, right? I mean, what did that look like?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, the calculus was that the why now was very compelling, right?
Had the antitrust settlement already happened?
Yeah, that was in 2024. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's the shifting regulatory change that's definitely interesting, although it hasn't necessarily resulted in meaningful change for the consumer
not
yet.
Not very fast.
No. But what it has done, and this is why I would argue that Ridley's had so much success early on, and I'd also argue that this is why we're seeing this sort of open door meme stock moment right now, is it brought the conversation to the headlines, to the dinner tables. And when nothing changed, I think it's resulted in this frustration. Like people are like, this is crazy. You know, everyone expected commissions to come down, even though that wasn't really necessarily what the lawsuit was about. And they actually have gone up. So we haven't seen a change.
You know, it's interesting because I was speaking with another real estate friend and we'd known each other for years and he was lamenting about this antitrust settlement, saying, but I'm worth it. I'm worth what I get paid. And I'm like, well, so?
Yeah.
I mean, great. You're worth it. So that means it's your job to explain why you're worth it the way any other business operates, the way any other business says, this is what I charge and why.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh. I'm like, shouldn't I pay you more than I pay someone who's never sold a house before or bought a house? Yeah. Well, yes. Okay. I was left scratching my head. Like, why is this so perturbing to him?
I think a lot of folks in the industry, you know, have forgotten that you need to justify your value. Like a lot of agents are trained on scripts. They're trained on how to manipulate the consumer into agreeing. It's like a sale. It's coming from this like salesy background when, you know, they're not really trained on explaining to a consumer why they're going to either get them more for their home or make the process easier for them or help them avoid risk. It's done from sort of a fear base and it's not done from a value base. And I think that's also one of my main frustrations. Again, this is not like ubiquitous in the industry. This is not every single agent, but it is a big problem.
Yeah. So
back to, you want me to go back to the why now?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think when I started to consider doing this, I started to have some conversations with folks who've spent some time in this industry. And when you look at the companies, there's a graveyard of companies who've attempted to come and offer low fee services. There's Homey, Homelister, Trelora, Colorado.
Yeah, Trelora's based. Yeah. Yeah.
And when you look at them, you know, they were not software companies. They were relying on full service real estate agents.
At a lower cost.
At a lower cost. They were oftentimes salaried. And the cost structure of these businesses was really never viable. They could never acquire customers at reasonable economics. Hmm. With AI, my argument is that we can actually use technology to navigate the vast majority of the process at much better economics. Our contribution margins are incredible right now, and they'll only continue to improve. So I don't think that this is a function of there not being demand for this. Mm-hmm. You know, Redfin mm-hmm. grew into a very large business. Homey was wildly successful for a period of time. I just don't think the cost structure of these businesses was viable, primarily because they were not software companies. They were relying on full service.
Well, agency. I got questions about the software then. First, I have a question about the AI itself. By the way, did you build your own AI model, or have you bolted smaller language models onto something bigger?
No. So we are working with a bunch of different foundational models with our own data set.
Got it. Yeah.
We're not creating our own foundational model. No, yeah. It's a vertical AI play.
And that makes so you're constantly working to improve it.
Of course.
Because I used your website and I'm like, okay, how much could you save me? And it's basically you're looking into the government records, you're figuring out what my house is worth, and then you're calculating whatever, roughly 3%.
Yep.
And so at least that's what the math showed to me.
Yep, roughly.
So what made me worried is that, okay, my yard is bigger than most of my neighborhood.
Sure.
It's at the end of a cul-de-sac, some are not. Yeah. It's got an extra half car garage, most don't.
Yeah.
Like, where is that in the math?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So when you go through our savings calculator, we're pulling an estimated home value for you, as you mentioned. We're not capturing that additional context yet. When you go through our pricing process, we capture all of the additional context that publicly available data
doesn't have. So there's some sort of questionnaire.
We capture everything. Yeah. We will know every home upgrade you've made, unique features, whether or not your home has an ADU, anything that's not available. You know, if there's an HOA.
I don't pick up my clothes, that's going to lower the price.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Property condition, all of these things that's not available in a Zestimate, that's not available in publicly available data. That is feeding our pricing agent that's ultimately giving you a pricing strategy to go to
market. I see. Well, that's more reassuring.
Yeah. But this is good feedback because I was talking to the team about this the other day. Like, I do think that sometimes people worry when they go through that savings calculator that we're going to sort of recommend a price that's in line with what his estimate is. And that's not exactly the case.
Yeah. Because I looked at it and look, I don't know. Everybody thinks their house is worth 20% more than
of course.
It is.
We all think of course. That.
And in fact, your number came back 20% lower than what I think my house is worth.
Yeah, yeah.
Almost
yeah.
exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that created a sense of distrust between me and your platform.
Yeah.
What do you do about that?
Well, I think it's a really good insight. I think we need to be transparent with the user at that point in time. That it's an estimated savings and that the actual, you know, expected home value would be derived once you go through later on in the product. I think we just need to be more clear on that. Mm. Yeah.
All right. I'll watch for that on your website.
Yeah.
So,
it's good.
Other questions though I had about, like, really you're in business still against, you won't like the way I said that, but against real estate agents.
I mean, we're in competition with agents as agents are in competition with one another.
Okay.
But we're against this system. We are trying to introduce a new system for buying and selling homes that is unapologetically consumer first, that also addresses some of the upstream inefficiencies that are facing real estate agents. I've mentioned lead fees, brokerage splits. Agents are going to be getting paid for the value they provide, regardless of whether or not a transaction closes on our platform. So
does that work?
So
I saw that on your website. Wait, how do you get paid even if there's not a transaction? How do realtors?
Because our customers are paying upfront for this service. They are working. Those who are working with a pro agent, the agent is getting paid you know, for the service that they're providing. And it's there is additional risk for the sellers in doing it this way. But the promising thing is, you know, our sellers are outperforming the market right now. They're selling for more and faster in terms of days on market. So
that's interesting. Look, yeah. I've been digging in so fast, I forgot to thank sponsors. I'm going to take a to thank sponsors. You're listening to ProCode 360, named Best Colorado Business Podcast of the last 5 years. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. This is the podcast for people who love Colorado and the stories of Colorado businesses and entrepreneurs. My guest today is Mike Chambers, founder and CEO of Ridley. I want to thank our sponsors, Via Technologies. Really appreciate them. They host ProCode 360, and they give me and their team gives me great help around managing the website. They specialize in all kinds of web-based and digital marketing-based services for customers that are smarter than average. So I'll just put it that way. They do a great job. Also, Colorado Biz Magazine, they do a great job featuring tremendous Colorado companies, and that's where ProCode 360 has been named Best Colorado Business Podcast. Also, my friends at Denver Ventures, we partner with them to feature great Colorado companies. So with that, it still feels like Ridley's job is to disintermediate, to take the agents out of the process, except where they are absolutely needed, which would be very threatening.
Yeah, I mean, I think we are trying to improve this system of buying and selling homes for consumers. We are unapologetically consumer first. That is our stance. But I do think that there's a valuable role for real estate agents in the future of real estate. I just don't think it's going to look anything like it does today.
Yeah. So it's going to be a process for real estate agents to figure out where they add the most value, I would think,
Here are my sort of predictions. I think that there's always going to be a percentage of the market that wants full service, that does not want to touch the process, that just wants someone, a white glove experience for someone to come take on. I think that we are going to move from a world where the agent is the center of the transaction, managing all aspects of the process, to a world where the platform is the center of the transaction and agents are going to be moving into supporting roles for high stakes moments. And I think as a result, we will definitely see a drastic reduction in the number of real estate agents. And for agents who are performing well, that should not scare you, because the vast majority of real estate agents haven't actually closed a single transaction. I think it's over 70% of real estate agents last year didn't close a single transaction.
Wow.
There's nearly 3 million real estate agents, I think, in the United States, like 1.5 million realtors. Yeah.
And most do it for friends and family.
Yeah, there's a lot. So I think that we will see a reduction in the number, but the role of the agent is going to shift into an advisory role to come in and help with high stakes moments, specific parts of the transaction. The platform is going to be able to automate and help the consumer navigate a lot of it.
How does that feel to you, Peter?
I mean, I think the reason like I even brought it up to you across the fence was because it was such an intriguing idea. Because especially on the list side, I was telling Dave, I was like, there's really not a lot to it as an agent.
Yeah.
I mean, you're pretty much doing the staging or getting them to call the stager, bringing in the photos and putting it on the market.
So, where do you think the agent provides the most value in the transaction?
You know, I think the most value is bringing it into, obviously, like with the negotiations piece.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah.
And even just having like a little handholding too.
Yeah.
And being comforting to the consumer. And that's really, I mean, that's really the biggest piece.
Exactly. And so coordinating photographers, figuring out pricing, coordinating staging, creating a listing and distributing it on someplace, helping with marketing, all of this stuff is automated with technology.
Hmm.
Transaction coordination can be automated with technology.
Staging too? Well, who decides what's going to look nice?
Well, the agents aren't doing the actual staging. This
is all outsourcing. So you have a contact and you say, you know, we got to hit up the photos, we got to hit the staging. And So,
I mean, really the agent's role is a quarterback in the transaction, but a lot of these things that they're doing, they end up spending a lot of time doing these things, and which is how they're justifying the commission, but they're not particularly complicated tasks.
Huh.
Right.
All right. So what about the things that buyers or sellers are most concerned about, or maybe I should just use the word fear.
Yeah.
And that has to do with contracts, legal stuff,
exactly.
Oversight, what to do about inspection results and how to negotiate outcomes around that. You're saying, okay, fine.
Great. We can have an expert behind their computer getting paid a great hourly wage for the advice that they're giving the consumer.
Yep.
and give you the guidance on, you know, appraisal issues, inspection issues, yeah, how to handle this stuff.
But yeah, it shouldn't be, in your case, you were going to pay $150,000. It would have been maybe $1,500 an hour to somebody or more.
I mean, that's
$15,000 an hour.
$15,000 an hour.
Yeah.
No, I mean, so, I spent roughly going to get under contract. Roughly, I think I said like 23 hours on the transaction. Mm-hmm. That wasn't including the social media stuff I was doing. Obviously, that was part of it. So I don't know if that was fair, but yeah, I mean, this is about just being realistic about the value that's being provided. Make sure that agents are being compensated. You know, a lot of times agents are spending hours and they're investing heavily in these properties and they don't close. They don't ever get compensated for mm-hmm. it.
Yeah.
So I think the consumer should take more responsibility in the process.
They don't want to.
Well, we're seeing that they do.
Are you? Yeah.
Where we've sold, you know, close to 70 homes in the first few months. Wow. We've generated around, I think, I don't know, 400 million in listings, around 6 billion in lead volume. There's demand there for sure.
Well, clearly. Okay. I'm going to shift gears. We talked about that a lot. I want to talk about the business piece of it more.
Yeah.
And that you just closed over $6 million in funding. And you were telling me before we started, that was oversubscribed.
Yeah.
People are super excited about this, right? Yeah. So, and basically you charge a fee, mm-hmm. Small, medium, large,
yep,
options
depending on the level of service
people want, right? But $6.4 million. What was the valuation on that?
I can't talk about valuation.
I knew you wouldn't. Yeah. Damn it. Okay.
I can't talk about valuation. Okay. But you know, we've grown really quickly. There's obviously there's a huge TAM in this industry. It's a massive industry, right?
Yeah.
And I think investors. Well, here's what I can say with confidence: investors and incumbents share our thesis in terms of where the industry is going.
Why is RE/MAX an investor?
RE/MAX is not an investor, but what I can say is, you know, the issue with incumbents is their core business models rely on monetizing real estate agents. And they have to tread very carefully around how they introduce features and products and tools that threaten their core customer.
Sure.
And
Kodak worried about that with digital cameras.
Yeah. I mean, it's true though. It's like, this is the reason why a lot of the bigger players have not sprinted to do mm-hmm. something like this.
Yep,
I think if you look at the acquisition history of some of the main players in the industry, you can see the trends of where mm-hmm. they're going. Mm-hmm. But it's a thesis that's shared by most.
Yeah. When you think about 6.4, what are you going to spend it on? You've got five employees now. You're hiring a few more, but you don't need $6.4 million for 10 people.
No, but we are, we're taking a big swing at this.
Yeah.
Yeah. We are, obviously we only launched in Colorado, so we have a limited sort of, you know, this is a regulated industry. There's a lot of nuance associated with standing up in additional states. We do have our essentials plan available in other states, and we're just launching our pro plan in Arizona and Florida.
So you've got to get licensed.
But
in
there's
state,
licensing, there's marketing expenses there. And quite frankly, I mean, this transaction it's fairly long, and to build this product to the standard that we're mm-hmm. going for requires a very heavy investment in the software and the data. So, you know, it's not a cheap industry.
Yeah. I mean, it's not that difficult to have a minimal viable product in any kind of software platform, but to get a platform that people trust, that they want to use, I mean, there's some momentum building and there's also some scaling. I mean, are you at a point where your product is, I guess, where you think it's close to where it's going to be?
It's never ending. It's never ending. No. We launched on July 15th. We incorporated the company on March 16th. We shipped the first version of the product incredibly quickly. There are companies within our product, right? There's a pricing component, listing creation and distribution, transaction coordination. All these things could be their own standalone companies.
Yeah.
So we have a lot to build to get the product to the standard that we're expecting. Mm-hmm. And we haven't even started to talk about the buy side platform, the agent tools. So we are investing very heavily in the software right now.
That's a long way of saying my question was stupid. Okay. But that's okay. I mean, any software platform evolves forever.
Yeah.
But I would think that some of the money has to be to move and evolve and to grow fast enough that the copycats can't grab you.
Yeah. I mean,
some of that's got to be part of the equation.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think if we continue to grow at the rate we do and capture the data that we are capturing, like, it's going to be very hard to copy us. I also know that the venture markets around consumer real estate prop tech platforms are very difficult.
Yeah.
And we're an anomaly. Mm-hmm. So we have this issue where you've got the incumbents who can't sprint to do this because of innovator's dilemma. And then you've got the startups who, you know, there's been Y Combinator had a startup trying to do the same thing. And they weren't, I don't believe, able to raise in their next round. I think it's as much a software problem as it is a product and marketing problem and a distribution problem. And, you know, I think we've got a good mix of both right
now. Yeah, but you have to get traction fast.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you already are.
Yeah.
So that's cool. What's the hardest thing that you didn't expect about getting this business to where it is now?
I think I probably underestimated how complex the regulatory environment is and how difficult it is to create a sort of unified product experience when you're dealing with like various compliance layers and state by state and sometimes region by region. It's really difficult. Everything from MLS forms to how yard signs are what needs to go on a yard sign. There's all of these rules and regulations. And by the way, these are intentionally done to make it difficult for
that's what I was wondering is are those barriers for disruption?
Of course. Because it's so silly. I mean, it's like font size on a yard sign or like just the rules that are in this industry, and you know better than I do because agents suffer from these just as much as, you know, people who are trying to do something differently. It's crazy. It's really crazy. Yeah.
So what, like you've done startups before and you've done high growth companies before. If you look back, you reflect back on those and you brought some level, maybe your greatest lessons learned from those to this, what helped the most?
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, I would say, you know, the ability to move incredibly quickly. Like I just, you know, it's like you see a problem and to move incredibly quickly and to surround yourself with people who are, you know, operators and are detail oriented and believe in the mission. You know, I think, you know, it really is sort of the perfect combination of all my past careers. You know, I started my career actually in the nonprofit space. I've always had a very strong desire to have a mission behind what I wake up for. I created two international education organizations, one in Kenya, one in Haiti.
I saw that. Flying Kites Global.
Yep, Flying Kites and
Summits.
Support
girls in Kenya.
And then Summits, we built 42 schools in Haiti. And then I transitioned into the software space in 2018 and have been fascinated by how we can leverage software to solve some of today's biggest problems. And so I think, you know, the speed of execution piece is really good. And then I think the most important thing I would say is technology these days, you know, with a lot of tech companies, they focus on the product. They focus on creating something perfect in stealth mode and building this incredible product behind the scenes and then launching it into crickets. Mm-hmm. And I actually kind of went the other way. Again, my intention wasn't to start it, but I had this built-in distribution engine to start. And then I built the product based on the sort of demand that I was seeing and the need that I was seeing. So it wasn't like I set out with an idea and then tried to find people who went into it. It was like, actually, I'm experiencing this feedback every single day that people want this. I'm going to go build that thing.
Yeah. Now, a little more about what you're building, and then we're going to have to wrap up because, oh my gosh, this has been great.
Yeah.
But I know you have to get back to Boulder to talk to investors.
I do.
Yeah. I know. So if I had a bigger checkbook, you'd sit right here with me longer, wouldn't you? So, but I love businesses that solve painful problems. I mean, the best ones have simple to understand solutions, even simpler for a buyer to see this massive benefit. And that I think you have, but this one thing sticks in my head, this huge challenge, which is overcoming sort of a buyer's fear of making a mistake in what for many is their biggest asset.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that?
So, I mean, this is for a buyer or a seller or both.
I think actually for a seller.
Yeah,
more so than a buyer.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, look, this is the largest and most consequential financial decision that any of us will ever make. And I think the industry has done a phenomenal job in, and I'm going to use this word very intentionally, gaslighting us into believing that this process is too complex or too dangerous, or you're going to get sued. You're going to leave money on the table. Like it has been very much so by design. The reality is the most surprising thing about doing this on my own through my own, you know, experience, and then also now seeing many sellers successfully navigate this process, is that it isn't nearly as complicated as we've been led to believe. And that, yes, things can come up, and there's solutions to navigate those things as they come up that don't require you to pay, you know, what the equivalent to a college savings or a retirement fund.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we also, so that I can say that, that's great.
Yeah.
But by giving people the ability to call on experts in aspects of the process that they might want additional help with in the form of lawyers or real estate agents, our sellers know that they have that backstop there as they're going throughout the process. Yeah. If something comes up, they can get on a call and they can navigate it.
Yeah.
And many, not all, that's sufficient.
That's enough. Yeah. 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 There's one other thing I was thinking about, as we wrap up, one other challenge I see is like, I know a lot of real estate agents.
Yeah.
They're friends.
Yeah. And they're in the community.
They're in the community. Yeah. Yeah. And they've treated me in a way that makes me feel like at some point they expect the listing for my house.
Of course.
Right? I mean, this is just the real world. And how do then, I mean, I think that's kind of going to be a hurdle at some point.
Of course.
Because people are going to say, how can I not do that? How can I tell this friend that
it's funny because we have a whole series we're going to put out on how to tell your real estate
agent. Is it going to be
how to break up with your real estate agent?
Is it going to be funny?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the reality is when people are considering saving tens of thousands of dollars, life-changing amounts of money, they're going to make a decision that's best for their family. And if that agent is a friend of them, they will understand, right? And so, or maybe they won't. But at the end of the day, they're going to do what's best for themselves and their family. And I think it gets really hard to compete with, not just when you consider the savings, but when you consider the fact that Ridley right now, we're outperforming agent represented listings on days on market. So our homes are selling faster and they are selling for more in terms of list to sold price ratio than traditional listings. Now we have a smaller sample size.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Right?
But still.
But not only are they saving more, but they're getting better outcomes.
Yeah.
And if we can continue on that trajectory at scale, it becomes incredibly hard to defend.
Yes, it does. I'm looking forward to seeing your tutorial on how to break up with your real estate.
It's going to be fun.
I'm sure it will be. Yeah. All right. Last couple of things. You're Colorado based, you know, which I love. Proco 360 focused on Colorado. But now, how did it happen that you decided to start here, stay here, and how's Colorado been for you?
Yeah. So I've, in my many careers, have had a long experience in the outdoors, and I used to guide expeditions internationally. And I always knew that Colorado was going to be a place where I wanted to raise a family. I grew up on the East Coast. And so when I stepped down as executive director of Summits Education in 2018, I moved out here. We were starting a family. We were going to kind of start, you know, a new life. And it's great. I mean, people here in Colorado like to get after it. And they, you know, they work hard and they push themselves in all aspects of their lives and they hold themselves to a high standard. And I love being around that energy. There's also an incredible ecosystem of builders here. You know, you've got investors and builders and, you know, I think one of the good things of COVID is that we actually got this influx of really talented, smart, passionate people to communities in Denver and Boulder and Colorado Springs and all across the country.
Because they could live where they wanted to.
Yeah. And we're sadly starting to lose some of them back to San Francisco with the AI boom. I think the data I just saw was there's a sort of net outflow right now, specifically in Boulder. But there's just a lot of great people here working on really interesting, important problems. And I feed off that energy.
That's cool.
Yeah.
All right. Last question. Based on your journey, like, and you've got now experience with a lot of startups, but also a startup that's going, you know, smash to the face to an existing industry, to an existing entrenched market. Like if someone wanted to do that, what advice do you give them as they would think about starting out?
You've got to have a lot of passion. you've got to have a lot of passion for whatever it is you're working on, because it is, there's all this like glamour around like being a founder. It is a one shit sandwich after the next. Forgive my language, but so you've got to have a lot of perseverance and endurance and passion for what you're building. And, you know, you've got to make sure that the problem that you're working on is actually a problem, that like there's actually a need for a solution. And then you got to just talk to everyone before you commit and jump off a ledge to do something like this and commit your life to it. Really spend some time talking and listening to everyone who's got any sort of familiarity with the industry or the process, and educate yourself as much as possible. I mean, fortunately, you know, you also though need to know who to listen to and know who not to listen to, and make sure you're surrounding yourself not just with the people who are telling you what you want to hear, but you know people who are telling you what you need to hear.
For sure. But in your space, you are pushing it back against this massive entrenched force. So how's that different? You know, and how did you have to think about it differently? How did you need a different level of fortitude to be willing to be seen and by many as, you know, a really unfortunate disruptor?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you gotta just not care what people think about you. Like seriously, I mean, you've got to just like forget about, you know, how people perceive you or what people think about you, but you also have to operate from a place of integrity and like actually believe in the things you're saying. And like, you know, I think, you know, I have definitely frustrated a lot of people. I have said some very controversial things that a lot of people don't want to hear. And these are things that I feel and that I believe in and that I'm truly frustrated by. Yeah, you've got to just be willing to put yourself out there and not care about how stupid you're going to look if you fail. Like, really, this is an important problem. I feel uniquely qualified to take this on. I feel very passionate and motivated to solve for this problem. And yeah, I'm looking at this as like a 10 to 20 year endeavor. Like, cool. I'm all in.
Yeah. Great. Well, let's wrap up on that note. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. And today on ProCode 360, you've been listening to my conversation with Mike Chambers, founder and CEO of Ridley. Listeners, glad you're here on ProCode 360, where we say live, work, love Colorado, because you and I and my guests can be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. You make the show successful by subscribing to the ProCode 360 podcast. If you haven't yet, it's a huge help if you submit a review in your app. Hey, I want to thank our sponsors, Via Technologies, Denver Ventures, and Colorado Biz Magazine. I also want to thank my friend Peter Simonson for sitting in and joining us today in studio. That's the show. Live, work, love Colorado.